Facebook.com/sockdrive.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up, we're going to talk about the many people who have been left homeless by Hurricane Michael in the Florida Panhandle. And also, we'll talk about the deadline to come up with financing to move the Rays baseball stadium to Tampa. Those are two of the topics on Florida this week, and we're going to hear that program next. First, one listener comment about last Friday's program. Last Friday, we were talking about a book that was written by John Herbers, the longtime New York Times reporter who covered the civil rights movement in the 1950s and 60s. Here's what one listener had to say following that show.
Linda from Spring Hill. This is an aside about the Emmett Till case. You mentioned that some people might not know about it or might not remember it. Just recently, probably earlier this summer, the woman involved in this came out and said that she had actually flirted with Emmett Till. He wasn't being forward with her. She had flirted with him and that everything had gone all right. She got upset and told her husband, but she recanted the entire story. So this boy died for nothing.
There's a listener comment that came in after last Friday's program. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Well, every Friday night, we assemble a group of journalists and political activists and politicians, and we sit down and talk about some of the major issues that are going on here in the Tampa Bay area and in Florida. The program is called Florida This Week. It airs on WEDU-TV, which is the PBS station that serves 16 counties here in West Central Florida. And we're going to hear that program right now. And as we listen back to the program, if you want to comment about any of the topics that are being discussed, you can always email into the studio, and I'll read your comments on the air after we hear this program, which lasts about 25 minutes. The program is called Florida This Week. Our email address here in the studio is dj@wmnf.org. Coming up next, thousands of people have inadequate housing in the Florida Panhandle weeks after Hurricane Michael hit. A new report on climate change has bad news for Florida's coastal communities. A battle looms in Tallahassee over who's in charge of issuing concealed weapons permits. And the deadline is coming for backers of a Tampa professional baseball stadium to find financing. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
WEDU Studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lori.
Welcome back. This week, our panelists are Patrick Mantega is the editor and publisher of La Gazzetta and a Democrat. Joe Henderson is an independent journalist. Jim Warashuk is the chair of the Hillsborough County GOP Executive Committee. And Amy Holyfield is the senior deputy editor for news at the Tampa Bay Times. Well, wonderful to have you here. Thank you for coming. Well, tens of thousands of people in the Florida Panhandle are still homeless weeks after Hurricane Michael plowed through the area. As the PBS NewsHour reported this week, some people are still living in tents. There's a shortage of rental housing. And FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, has been slow to provide trailers to those who need them. So, Amy, the PBS NewsHour had a great report. I urge everybody just to watch it if they can. But people are still homeless. Hundreds of people, if not thousands, in the Florida Panhandle. We're hardly talking about it at all. But we know there's a problem. What do you make of, you know, how to fix it, how to help those people up there?
I think we got to make sure people don't forget they're there. We actually have a story in tomorrow's Tampa Bay Times. We were in Panama City this week, saw the same thing, the tent cities, talked to the people there. I mean, it's a real problem in terms of help, and you know, people lost everything, so they can't even prove who they are in order to, you know, rent something else or get into it.
No, we're getting back to like the Katrina kind of problem where FEMA does not seem to be doing the job it's supposed to be doing.
Right. I mean, there's a little bit about that. I think there's complaints about how long it's taken to get trailers there. There's very few of that. We had a story this week too about Panama City trying to get comfort stations, you know, just trying to get places with showers and electricity, and the state just not even answering. Turns out they weren't doing it the right way. So the city shelled out, you know, more than $1 million just to get those things for the residents.
Yeah, this is essential, and without media coverage, I mean, I think the media has been talking about the elections for the last few days and really has forgotten the victims up there in the panhandle.
Well, you know, we've this isn't the first hurricane we failed to deliver long-term help for. You know, we had one in Puerto Rico that we failed at, and we didn't seem to want to learn from it and figure out how to be able to have a different type of infrastructure being able to be installed. You know, those first few days after hurricane, we certainly seemed to know what to do, but after that, you know, when we get to a month after the hurricane, we just don't have it quite figured out. You know, and some of this also is even in how we look at hurricanes. You know, in the state of Florida, it's easy to find out how much people have claimed in insurance claims. What you can't find out is how much has been collected. You know, so when you see, you know, I think it's a $3.4 billion in claims in the state of Florida for that hurricane, how much has insurance paid out? Has that happened fast enough? Are people able to get their lives back in order who do have resources and have paid for those resources, but perhaps they're still coming slowly?
All right, so should we be pointing fingers at the politicians? Should we be saying the people in charge of the state or in charge of the federal government ought to take a closer look at this, and they are responsible for the position that we're in?
Yeah. Let's be blunt. Michael was a catastrophe that we just can't fathom. FEMA is not, as currently structured, designed to deal with a catastrophe on that level. They're still cleaning up from Hurricane Irma a year ago. They haven't really restored everything from that. Then along comes this monster, and you see people living in tents, sleeping on the beach, doing all this kind of stuff, and it's horrifying. What should happen is that our fearless leaders in Washington and Tallahassee and other places need to take a realistic look, not a hard look, but a realistic look at the needs of that agency going forward, because climate change tells us that this ain't the last one of these bad boys we're going to have.
All right. Well, on that point, let's segue. More powerful hurricanes are just one of the predictions contained in the latest National Climate Assessment, released the day after Thanksgiving, when people were paying more attention to food, football, and shopping than they were to the news.
The report, produced by 300 scientists and 13 federal agencies, says Americans need to take action on global warming to avoid substantial damages to the U.S. economy, environment, and human health. In addition to more intense hurricanes, the federal report says Florida is likely to experience extreme coastal and inland flooding, especially in the Tampa Bay, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and Apalachicola areas. More mosquito-borne diseases will take place as warmer temperatures increase the number of the flying insects. More invasive species, such as the Burmese python, coral reefs will continue to die, hurting tourism, fishing, and decreasing wave protection. Heat-related health threats will increase. In some areas, the average temperatures will rise by 3 degrees year-round, affecting outdoor workers, especially in construction, agriculture, and forestry. And toxic algae blooms and red tide will increase because of the warming ocean temperatures. The report says by the end of the century, the economy could take a 10% hit because of climate disruption.
All right, Jim, I know there's a lot of climate skeptics out there, too, that think that these reports are really bunk. The president said he didn't believe this report the other day. But Hurricane Michael and the kind of destruction we've seen from Irma and some of the other hurricanes, is that the new normal, or is that just a natural, you know, part of the process of weather?
Well, I have to go back and look at, you know, we had Hurricane Andrew in the 90s, and we had a lot of other horrific hurricanes throughout Florida's at least modern history in the 30s and the 20s. I certainly lived in Florida most of my military career up on the Panhandle and went through a lot of hurricanes in the 80s. So we need to be smarter at how we can go about predicting and preparing for them. And we touched on a lot of those issues with regard to what FEMA needs to do. Every county is different in its layout, and we're doing a lot of things where we are impacting flooding because we're building closer to the water, and we need to take that into consideration in selling property and land costs and the costs of insurance. So this is a bigger thing than just the climate change scientists. This is a development issue. We have Florida growing in population because people are escaping other climate in the north, the cold winters and what have you. So we need to look at a strategic plan for how we deal with not only environment, but developmental issues in the whole state.
Do you think the politicians are taking the issue of global climate change seriously?
You know, that I think we're still out on that. There's a lot of debate, and we still hear a lot of debate. One report by one group, granted it's 300 scientists, needs to be studied and perhaps look at other issues and go back and look at historical trends. As I said, we had horrific hurricanes throughout the last century, and look at how do we prepare for them and how do we grow our state and how we develop our state to be more prepared as well. We're going to deal with this whether it's hurricanes or whatever along the way. So there's a lot of smart things that need to be done.
Amy, what would you say?
We heard just this week that they, you know, it's the end of hurricane season just ended, so they've sort of taken stock of what we saw in 2018, and what they said is, you know, maybe we need a Category 6. Like, that's where we're at, and it's because part of that is because of climate change, because of the warmer waters that are making it possible for these hurricanes to form and for them to be so much stronger. I mean, what we saw with Michael was an extraordinary thing. You know, the speed, the quickness, the longevity, like, that seems to be the new normal for what we're going to face, and that's part of climate change.
Patrick, do you think the politicians are taking this threat seriously?
Absolutely not. We've not made any adjustments. Currently, we're doing all kinds of stormwater projects in South Tampa that aren't taking into account the fact that there'll be nowhere to pump stormwater during the rain because the tides are going to be so high. Currently, look where all our development is. We're on the low end of downtown Tampa, right on the waters, where we're putting millions and millions and millions of dollars. How does that make sense down the road 10 or 15 years from now if we're going to have a rise in sea level? Mm-hmm. And so, no, we're not thinking ahead at all. Currently, everything we're doing is about today's weather, today's tides, today's floodplains, and we're not calculating anything in, and it's going to bite us.
All right. Well, a battle is shaping up in Tallahassee over which state agency should have control over concealed weapons permits.
Right now, the Florida Department of Agriculture issues those permits and does background checks. But the Tampa Bay Times reported earlier this year the Ag Department has failed to adequately screen applicants for concealed permits. So some Democrats want to move the responsibility for the permits to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, the FDLE. But gun lobbyist Marion Hammer of the NRA wants oversight of those permits to go to the Chief Financial Officer's Department. Florida is unusual in that concealed weapons permits are the job of the Agriculture Department. Most other states leave that responsibility up to either law enforcement or to the courts.
So, Patrick, why does Marion Hammer want to move this job over to Jimmy Patronis in the state CFO's office?
It's a good question. You know, it seems like she's shopping for something that the rest of us aren't. We're just trying to find competency in handling gun permits. She seems to be trying to find some politician out there who might, I don't know, do it wrong, do it right. I mean, it was over at agriculture because of the NRA to begin with. And so now to go to the CFO's office really doesn't make any sense. You know, we currently have a Democrat going in as the agricultural commissioner. And I think she and Democratic legislators are still even happy to move it away from her and put it to the FDLE because that's what makes sense. So it just appears that the NRA is trying to shop for somebody who might not do a good job with this program.
Well, that is a question, Joe. Where does it make the most sense?
FDLE is where it makes the most sense. But Marion Hammer, if anybody thinks she's proposing this for any other reason than Nikki Fried won the election,
Democrat won,
you know, I got some swamp land I want to sell you. She absolutely, positively does not like to tap the brakes at all on any gun regulation. And so Nikki Fried ran on the idea that I'm going to try to tighten this up a little bit, and Marion Hammer goes, well, we'll just see about that.
Jim, where do you think it makes most sense?
Well, I think it needs to be in an agency that's accountable, whether that's the agricultural commissioner or whether it's under the FDO. It needs to be under someone who's an elected official where they're accountable to it rather than an appointed official. Now, the discussion of moving this somewhere came about long before the election, so it was already a consideration. In fact, as an NRA member, and I know a lot of the folks in the business with the NRA, I kind of got word probably 3 or 4 weeks before the election that it was already being looked at to be moved. So that probably was the result of some of the mishandling that was done under Adam Putnam, and we all heard about that. And so there was an effort already afoot on where to move it to be a little bit more accountable. And so,
well, Amy, it was your newspaper, The Times, that exposed the problems in the Agriculture Department and its handling of issuing the permits. Marion Hammer of the NRA has quite a track record. She wins a lot in Tallahassee. She carries a lot of weight up there with the state legislature. What's your take on where this is headed?
Absolutely, she does. And, you know, one of the stories we wrote was all the emails she'd sent to the Agriculture Department employees just at all hours asking for all kinds of things. It wasn't just about the guns. It was about, you know, I can't even remember the topics. It was crazy. So I think she's going to wield influence no matter where it is. She's got connections. She's important. But I think I agree with Joe. Unquestionably, this is about trying to put it in a place where she can have her influence.
Patrick, I want to ask you what Jim said. Jim said it belongs under an agency that has an elected head that's accountable to the public.
I don't know why, because, you know, even the FDLE is accountable to the governor. So somebody's always accountable for every employee. But I really think, you know, when you're just talking about the mechanics of going through and doing a check, you know, we've already had legislation that says this is how we do gun permits. And so if it's just a mechanical issue of doing it right, then I don't know why I need a Republican or a Democrat to do it. I should be able to have somebody in law enforcement, because at the end of the day, if law enforcement makes a mistake with this, they are going to have to be on the front lines of those mistakes.
Jim, what would you say back?
Well, you got to consider, as Amy said, Marion Hammer has a large constituent, 1.8 million, and they're going to dictate pretty heavily on how this is handled and how accessible it is for those who have concealed weapons and those who want to have them. So it's going to have to be done logically and with some reason to make it effective. And where it falls out, you know, that will be probably decided by law through the legislation.
But you're also betting on Marion Hammer, too, to win this one.
Well, we'll see.
All right. Well, the people who want to move the Tampa Bay Rays baseball team from St. Petersburg to Tampa have until the end of December to come up with financing for the proposed $900 million stadium in Ybor City.
That's a huge number. And as the deadline approaches, it's not clear that the Tampa Group will have enough money committed to build the new state-of-the-art stadium in Tampa's Latin Quarter. And there's a controversy about the stadium site. WTSP-TV reported that Hillsborough County Commissioner Ken Hagan secretly provided information about the location of the likely Ybor site to developer Daryl Shaw. Shaw purchased three properties in and around the stadium footprint long before it became public that the Ybor site was the team's favorite in the county. Hagan takes issue with the WTSP report, saying the allegation that he tipped off developer Shaw about the site is laughable. He wants county attorneys to look into the possibility of filing a defamation lawsuit against the TV station. In its reporting on the Ybor site, WTSP also uncovered part of an ongoing Bay Area mystery. Who were the local investors who gave the Tampa Bay Times a much-needed $12 million loan last year? The TV station reported that one of the lenders was Daryl Shaw, the person who bought the Ybor property. Now, the identities of 7 of the 8 lenders have been made public, and only one remains secret.
All right, Joe, I threw a lot of stories in there, but let me start with the first one, and that is there's 30 days from now, whoever wants to bring this stadium to Tampa has to come up with a financing plan and show that they can finance a $900 million stadium. Are they going to meet that deadline at the end of this month?
Probably not.
Yeah.
And I think we'll find then that a deadline is not always a deadline when it comes to stadium financing. This has been going on, I don't know, most of my adult life, it seems like, between building what is now Tropicana Field and then everything else. These things are never simple. They're never quick. They always look like they're going to die, and then somehow they get resurrected.
Do you believe that they're on track, though? I mean, because they've been holding or making these announcements about several billion here, several billion there.
Well, that the problem comes, you know, when you have a stadium that is almost $900 million, you're not going to find one magic financing plan that's going to solve it. It's a piece here, a piece there. You figure out how much the team's going to put in. Then you say, all right, can we create a special taxing district? Can we do this? Can we do that? And gradually all the pieces come together. And that's not a quick process.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, the team is going to put up some money, but people are saying they're not putting up enough. How is the public going to have to put up money, according to this Tampa group that wants to bring the Rays to Ybor? Are they counting that down the road there will be some public money?
The Rays 2020 were there to come up and see what the corporate world could do. And, you know, at the moment, they've offered $16 million a year, $160 million over 2 years. The idea is that, you know, the Rays should come up with their piece and the private should come up with theirs. And then the public knows what it might have to fill in. You know, it's hard to imagine that we won't be on the hook for something. But right now, with a Democratic County Commission, I don't think they're willing to write a check. And we've got a mayor's race to come through before we're going to have any idea if the mayor's willing to write any kind of a check. So, you know, it's hard to say at this point.
And St. Pete Mayor Rick Kreisman seems pretty confident that the Rays are not going to move.
Well, and he also seemed pretty angry that Hagan might have got involved beforehand.
Well, do you think there's anything to the Channel 10 story that maybe Hagan leaked information?
Well, I think even if you don't want to think he leaked it, he obviously prevented public records from going out that would have put every business owner and every property owner in Ybor City on the same page and with the same knowledge that Daryl Shaw had. So just withholding records at this point could have given Shaw an advantage. You know, I know somebody who has property in that plot. They never bought another piece of property after or before. They owned it for years beforehand. And so, you know, you don't have to question that, but Daryl was rapidly buying property throughout this whole process. And you have to wonder.
Jim, do you think Ken Hagan was defamed by this investigative report at Channel 10?
I don't know if he was defamed. I think it opened more people's eyes to how politics are in Hillsborough and what's going on, and will give voters and taxpayers a better view. I think in the end, and I agree to some extent with what Patrick said, except from the standpoint of how badly the influence is going to be to bring the Rays here, whether the public will be tasked to pay a portion of it at some point in time, or the deadline is pushed further and further down the road, as Joe said, where there's an opportunity for some other outside investment. I think the taxpayers shouldn't be on the hook for another dime of, you know, sports investment, because we're already on the hook going back many years. And I think let the promoters and the private investors put their money where their mouth is.
Amy, this week I threw in that part about the Times because there is a mystery about who made this $12 million loan last year. Some people who are sniping against the Times say the Times has kind of looked the other way when it comes to some of the stories involving its investors. What would you say as somebody that, you know, you're pretty much near the top of the Times in terms of editorial content. What would you say about how strongly you're going to investigate stories that deal with the investors of the Times?
Well, first of all, they're not investors.
Okay.
They're lenders. They don't have any say in the company. They don't have any stake in the company, and they have no say in the coverage of it. So I would say...
Wrong word. Okay.
I just want to make that clear, because I think it's important, because when you're an investor, you have an ownership in the company, and that makes you feel like you have a say, and that's not what this was. This is a loan.
Yep.
And it's part of the loan paperwork that there's no say, there's no stake. And so we feel very strongly that that isn't a problem for us. And frankly, I certainly never knew who the investors were before anyone else. I don't know who the mystery 12th person is. So you just take it with a grain of salt and cover people the same way we have everything relentlessly.
We continue to dog the stories.
Exactly.
All right. Well, before we go, what other news stories should we be paying attention to? Patrick, let's start with you. Your other big news story.
Well, the new governor is going to be sent nominees for the Supreme Court, Florida Supreme Court, for the three positions that are up. One of the people who are leaving the court is Peggy Quince, the only African-American on the court, and none of the nominees are African-American. So for the first time in 30 years, we will not have a black on the Supreme Court of the state of Florida.
All right. Jim, your other big story?
Well, being a national security kind of person, I'm still focused now on what's happening up in Washington with the investigation with Mueller and how that goes. It's starting to increase in intensity with some new investigations and some new charges being put forward, so keeping an eye on that.
Is the president in a much worse position this week now that Cohen has been charged with these crimes?
No,
I
don't think so. He was involved as a personal lawyer to the president and decided to go a little bit further out on the limb on his own to try to take over a dying investment opportunity in Russia that really wasn't going to go anywhere in the first place.
All right. Amy, your other big story?
I got two for you. First of all, there's an extraordinary investigation in Sunday's Tampa Bay Times about the Heart Institute at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital and some just really troubling things that happened in terms of surgeries gone wrong and children, and sort of an alarming rate of deaths and also mishaps compared to other hospitals across the state. The second one is this extraordinary topic going on about the governor and whether he will resign his office in order to take the oath of office for the Senate on time, which is January 3rd, or whether he will stay in office through the entire term, January 8th, and deny Carlos Lopez Quintero the chance to be governor for 5 days. Kind of good parlor game right now.
Big story. All right. And Joe, your other big story?
Well, I'll kind of keep my eye on the with the Rays situation, on what's happening across the country with Oakland and Portland. There was an announcement this week that Oakland is moving forward with a privately financed baseball stadium. So when we ask how much should the public here be on, you know, the tab for? Zero. Mm-hmm. But and the other one would be Portland, which announced it wants to build a stadium. It has a plan, and the Rays would be target number one.
All right. Well, thank you all for a great show, and thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org.
That was Florida This Week, which is a television show that airs on WEDU-TV, the PBS station here in the Tampa Bay area. And my guest on that show, Amy Holyfield, who is one of the top editors at the Tampa Bay Times, Patrick Mantega, editor and publisher of La Gazzetta. He was the Democrat on that panel. Jim Warshak, the chair of the Republican Executive Committee in Hillsborough County. And then Joe Henderson, who's an independent journalist, and his columns appear in the Tampa Bay Times. And we did get one comment about that. If you want to comment about any of the topics, we talked about the homeless people as a result of Hurricane Michael. We talked about the climate change report, the national assessment. We talked about changing which agency in the state is in charge of issuing concealed weapons permits. And we also heard about the deadline for financing for that proposed new Rays baseball stadium in Tampa. That deadline is coming up at the end of this month. We did get one email about the show. This comes from a person in Newport Richey. Jeff writes this regarding the homeless people. He says, so where is our Senator Bill Nelson? He was right on top of making sure Puerto Ricans were taken care of. Now it's time for Floridians to be taken care of. And our senator, Bill Nelson, is AWOL. That's Jeff's email in Newport Richey. Well, who do you think is responsible for the homelessness problem as a result of Hurricane Michael? Let's listen to this PBS report from 1 week ago about still the huge problem of homelessness in the Florida Panhandle after Hurricane Michael. This was what PBS reported just a few days ago, right after Thanksgiving.
Consumers.
All right, so we're going to have to take a second before we bring this up. But again, if you want to comment, you can call us up, 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org.
Many Americans accustomed to celebrating Thanksgiving in their own homes found themselves homeless for the holiday this year. We're not just talking about victims of California's calamitous wildfires. There are also those in the Florida Panhandle, devastated last month by Hurricane Michael, who spent Thanksgiving wondering if and when help would be on the way. News Over Weekend special correspondent Simon Ostrovsky has our story.
For the Boucher family this year, this is what Thanksgiving looked like.
Yeah, I don't.
Or mom's cooking.
Dad's turkey's way better. Yeah, dad tastes way better. It was
it's
like
out. That's not disgusting at all.
The reason they didn't celebrate around the dining room table? They no longer have one.
Turkey, cornbread dressing, sweet potatoes, everything you need for the perfect Thanksgiving except for the most important thing, a home.
Like thousands of others in this area, the Bouchers lost everything in October in the most powerful storm to hit the Florida Panhandle in history, Hurricane Michael. Michael pounded the Gulf Shore with 155-mile-per-hour winds that laid waste to entire cities, doing billions of dollars worth of damage. At least 52 people across the U.S. Southeast were killed, and up to 20,000 more were left homeless. 6 weeks after the storm, James Boucher and his family are among the thousands of people county officials told us were still without adequate housing. They've been living in this shelter with over 100 others.
None of my children got hurt. Nobody got hurt. Yeah, I'm very thankful for that.
And do you think you're going to be able to find a place in the near future?
They want us to relocate. This is where we live. This is our home. There's homes out there that are just too expensive for us because the area that it hit was all of the affordable homes for families. But there's no available units for us at all.
And therein lies the crux of the problem. FEMA has handed out over $91 million in housing assistance to hurricane survivors in Florida so far. That may sound like a lot, but with so much devastation, rentals here are in short supply. And those who don't want to leave the area because of jobs and schools are left with limited options. Tents, shelters, or ideally FEMA trailers. But officials in Bay County, where the hardest-hit cities of Mexico Beach and Panama City are located, complain the Federal Emergency Management Agency has been slow to provide its residents with FEMA trailers.
People feel like FEMA doesn't help them. They estimate around 2,000 people have qualified for some sort of housing assistance. Right now, there's less than probably a dozen what we consider FEMA trailers in Bay County. They tell us they're going to ramp those numbers up to 25 daily. I'd love to see that. It's hard to believe at the rate they're going right now.
Although almost 1,700 people have been approved for trailers in the five worst-hit counties, FEMA has supplied just 40 in the month and a half since the hurricane. That means many Floridians are spending the holidays out in the elements. Michael Cannon weathered the hurricane in his mobile home. This is all that's left.
It's total devastation. Two bedrooms are gone. The kitchen, the walls, I watched the walls ripple, like a rippling, like this, as the floor was shaking. And like I said, that was scary.
He's been living in these two tents with his family ever since.
We're hoping to try to get a FEMA trailer. That's what we're... It's a slow process of getting any answers, though. You're not really sure what you're eligible to get.
It's something we heard from many of the people we spoke with. They cite complicated, cumbersome bureaucracy and officials who they claim don't seem to be in much of a hurry.
Yeah, your FEMA registration number.
They explained to us that it's only been weeks since the disaster, but that's hard to explain to somebody who's homeless right now. There are thousands of people that don't have a home. They're either living with their friends or family or in other some sort of housing. The FEMA housing units are just not in our community yet for these people. And it's been very slow. As I've said, the bureaucracy is very impressive.
FEMA officials point out that surveying damage and assessing eligibility when over 98,000 have asked for help and information is a time-consuming process. They also told us there were other ways to house survivors besides the trailers. More than 18,000 have been approved for rental assistance, for example. Tammy Nichols was one of those approved.
Good morning, everybody. Now we're ready to start our day.
But she told us there's nowhere to spend the money with so much of the housing stock damaged. Instead, she's been living in this tent city with her disabled daughter.
Even though you have a money and a check, there's not that many apartments. Even though they have this big long list, there's not that many, you know, you have children, you have disabled, you have specific needs.
One issue we've heard county officials bring up with us is that, you know, there's rental assistance, but there isn't necessarily places to rent from. There's no vacancies because so much of the housing stock has been destroyed.
We're keenly aware of the housing situation. That's been one of the issues that we're, or the challenges that we've faced here in the last few weeks. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution. There are multiple approaches to this, rent and repair. There's also transitional sheltering assistance. There's also the travel trailers as part of the direct housing package. So it's a multi-pronged approach to providing housing to people in this area.
Everything is destroyed. So this is home, but more importantly is we have our family and we're safe and we're starting over and that's okay.
For those braving the elements this holiday weekend, help can't come soon enough.
Starting to get old now, you know. Want to get a roof over our head. It's been some cold nights. I would like to receive help, you know, just like anyone would.
Did you ever expect that 6 weeks later, by Thanksgiving, you'd still be out of home?
Never.
I think we're all together. Hey, you have to hold your hat on something. I mean, that's what I'm thinking.
Well, that was a report on the PBS NewsHour a week ago about the thousands of people are still homeless in the Florida Panhandle after Hurricane Michael. They went through over the Thanksgiving weekend, and that reporter, Simon Ostrovsky, did that report for the PBS NewsHour. Now, many of those people are still there. Very little media coverage. The Tampa Bay Times did have a story on Saturday. Another cold front is approaching, going to drop the temperatures down up there into the 30s. People are still living in tents, and especially Mexico Beach and Panama City greatly affected. FEMA seems to be in no hurry, as you heard there. And the one guy just sarcastically said the bureaucracy has been very impressive. That's a great sarcastic way to put it. We had one emailer say, well, it's Senator Bill Nelson's fault. He should do something about it. We do have a governor who's still in office, and I looked at the governor's schedule last week. There was very little on the governor's schedule last week. He wasn't going to Panama City. He wasn't going to Mexico Beach. But these people seem to be in dire straits. Well, let's take some phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Adam writes this: it's almost unbelievable to still hear people trying to argue that climate change is not real. When we say romaine lettuce is not safe to eat, everyone believes the CDC. But when scientists all around the world agree that climate change is real, people still doubt it. I really don't understand why people with no experience want to play scientist. You shouldn't play doctor and try to do your own surgery, would you? You would trust the expert, writes Adam. Let's take some calls. Frank Knox is our phone producer today, and this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And we're going to go to Thomas, who's in, I think, in Ellington. Thomas, is that you?
Yeah, hey. Good
Hi,
to
Thomas.
Talk to you. You know, as I said, what's the head count on the people that are homeless because of the hurricane?
We don't have an adequate head count. We know it's in the thousands. The quote, there was thousands of people without adequate shelter. Some of those people are living in tents. Some are doubling up with relatives and friends. But it's in the thousands.
Okay, so I'm not sure if that's over 10,000 or not, but I don't know. You know, the federal government is in charge of FEMA, but, I mean, being a state that has hurricanes all the time, you would think, like, maybe about 50 years ago or something that, you know, there would be a big area in the middle of Florida, like in Orlando or something, where we would have like 25,000 trailers just ready to go anywhere in the state if needed, you know, temporarily for like a couple years until someone needs to, or how long it takes. And then they would bring them back there, refurbish them in case it's ever needed again. And I'm just surprised we don't have something like that. You know, I mean, we have citizens insurance. We have other things. We should have more solar. But, in, you know, I'm talking about being more self-sufficient as Floridians. So, you know, I hope that's something that passes. Hey, and I know this is kind of a little off topic. I did want to mention, you know, on the referendums, I'm just surprised it's not getting much attention. Like, you know, no drilling offshore and stuff. You know, and they wanted to add a, you know, restricting vaping to that. I mean, that seems totally unconstitutional to what the initiative referendum rules are. And I just want to point that out, and I hope we can talk about that sometime again. But, yeah, that's my comments, the solution.
All right, Thomas, thanks a lot. Yeah, that usually you can't combine two items in a referendum issue that's on the ballot here in Florida, but one agency is allowed to do that. Every 20 years, the Constitution Revision Commission gets to write its own amendments, and they don't really have to pass muster. They don't have to meet that one subject rule. So this time around, there was the no drilling offshore amendment and the no vaping rule combined into one constitutional amendment. It was odd. And as to Thomas's other point, I mean, I think what's interesting is that the TV networks are giving us 24/7 coverage of the passing of President Bush. I certainly think that that's a big story. But I would also think that thousands of people homeless in the panhandle is a big story, too. And maybe with the exception of PBS, there really hasn't been much out there. So let's say we can talk about anything that's on your mind that's in the news, and we've mentioned a lot of things so far. Let's go to, I think, Bernard in St. Petersburg. Bernard, did I get your name right?
Yes, you did. Can
All right.
you hear me?
Yeah, Bernard, take it away. What would you like to say?
Okay, it's about the moving the baseball stadium.
Okay.
A couple of things. I've seen a couple of weeks ago where the Bucks was ranked right at the bottom of attendance. So, and football is supposed to be American sport. So if Tampa can't get people in the stadium for the Bucks, what make them think they're going to get people in the stadium for baseball? The second thing is, as far as number-wise, I'm not sure exactly how many people is attending the baseball game here in St. Pete, but do you know what's the difference in number-wise that they're going to expect to get in Tampa that they're not getting here in St. Pete? And I get off and listen to you.
All right, Bernard, thanks a lot. And I'm not an expert on this. I think the numbers for the baseball team are every time they have a home game, it's under 20,000 people attending for the most part, except for the home opener and maybe a few big games when Boston comes to town or New York goes to town, Compare that to the Bucks. I think historically the Bucks, for a while there, had a run of pretty full stadiums because the team was playing really well, and the owners had put a really great team on the field. Now you're right. I think I saw a number the other day that some of the attendance figures for the Bucks stadium, which holds about 60,000 people, there were only 20,000 people showing up for the games. I have not gone to a Bucks game this year, so I am not an expert on this. And usually I'm out doing some sports activities Saturday and Sunday afternoon, so I'm not watching a lot of football. But I think that's my take, Bernard. But, you know, if the home team, the Bucks, were to start winning some football games, I think that you would see a lot of people showing up and buying tickets for the Bucks games. But you're right. I mean, the big question is, why don't these owners do it themselves? They're owning, you know, they own these teams that are worth $1 billion. Why can't they put up their own stadium? It's not as if we as folks that work for a living and go to work and put in hard 8 or 9 or 10 hours a day, it's not as if we're not paying enough taxes already. Should we be paying more taxes to help subsidize a team? And how does that team help you or me? I think that's a question we've got to ask ourselves. Let's go to Margo in Bartow. Hi, Margo. You're on M&F. What's on your mind?
Hi. I got a disagreement last week with a Trumpster who said that it was the Democrats' fault that the people in the panhandle have received no assistance. And I don't see how people are blaming the Democrats for this situation when, again, like you said, we had a Republican governor whose best friend is Donald Trump, pick up the phone and call him and tell him, bring what's up with FEMA. And by the way, FEMA has no money because Trump took it all and sent it over to build his wall. But folks still vote. Last I checked, Panama was a red county. And we've been under Republican rule since 1998. Are they tired of this now? Like, no, it's not the Democrats. Wake up.
Yeah, Margo, that's exactly right. There are two agencies. One is FEMA, and that's under the direct control of the president. And then we have our own disaster response agency here in the state of Florida. That's under the control of Governor Rick Scott. Direct control. These are all executive branch functions. They're not controlled by Congress. So when you ask, go ahead.
He's gone. He makes his public appearance during when he was running for the Senate race in a affluent neighborhood, and then that's it.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I checked the governor's schedule the other day, who was in charge of this disaster preparedness agency in the state of Florida, and he was taking a pretty light week last week. He didn't have many official functions last week, and I think the problem, too, is that the press has to keep going up to Panama City and Mexico Beach and showing these people living in tents until President Trump sees it on Fox and until Governor Rick Scott hears about it on Rush Limbaugh, then they'll wake up and they'll figure out, oh, there's a problem.
And then we have DeSantis coming in to be our governor, and he doesn't have a plan. He's never even mentioned the panhandle and what his plans are to fix it. But
yeah,
the majority still voted for him.
All right, Margo, thanks a lot. Thanks for raising those good points. Remember, disaster recovery is part of the executive branch, whether it be your president or whether it's your governor. Let's go to Scott, who's in Tampa. Hey, Scott, you're on WMNF. What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, I just want to concur with the PBS report. I was up in the panhandle in Panama City on Thanksgiving, handing out food, and I was amazed that I saw no presence by FEMA, and there was so much destruction and so much work to do. We were in a high school, and the only organizations that were up there helping people was the Tallahassee Democratic Socialist of America and the Poor People's Campaign. And my wife and I, we were riding home. All I can figure is that this is just kind of a response in the age of neoliberalism, where the wealthy really don't pay taxes anymore. And that, coupled with the massive wildfires in California, which the media shifted its attention to. So it's almost like a whack-a-mole. You kind of contain something, and the media goes to the next kind of climate-induced disaster. But I saw no presence with FEMA. And in fact, the neighborhood the high school was located in, was a working class neighborhood. And it almost looked like when they unearthed a Mayan ruin. These neighborhoods had trees felled over them. I just couldn't believe it. But I saw no support. And anyway, I just wanted to share that story with everyone.
And Scott, from your perspective, having been up there over Thanksgiving, what do the folks there need most? I mean, they need housing, but is there anything that we can do as citizens, other things that we can do to help them out?
Really, it's just a matter of trying to keep the conversation going. And as you said, if the media would put a little bit of a spotlight on it, and I'm sure this is happening in Puerto Rico and wherever else, it just goes off the out of the media cycle so quickly. But I was absolutely astonished, Rob, to see the amount of destruction up there. So it's certainly, people need housing is important, and just like chainsaws and cutting and just clearing the way in their homes so they can get their cars in their driveway. And there's just a tremendous amount of work to be done, but really it's almost on such a level that it requires a governmental response to do it. It's almost like a public works type size, but that's all really at this point I can offer. But I just couldn't believe the amount of destruction, but no really federal presence for this. So.
All right, Scott, thanks a lot. Thanks for the eyewitness account. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, good to hear from you. Here's our phone number. It's 813-239-9663. Anonymous writes, your emailer, Jeff, in Newport Richie, sure is good at regurgitating propaganda, writes 813. And another emailer writes, Margo is spreading fake news about FEMA money, and you did not correct her. This is another anonymous person. I'm not sure what I should have corrected Margo about. I think she was pretty spot on. Let's go to Steve in Lakeland. Steve, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
Yeah, I wanted to just make a comment. I believe it was you that asked the question about the stadium, why the owner is not, seeking to fund it himself. And I remember my dad, who passed this past July, one of his statements he used to make all the time was the difference in thinking between an ordinary individual, let's just use middle class, and somebody who's wealthy. They both have some money. And my dad would say that the working man has this little pot of money and he's trying to figure out a way that he can make some money off that little pot of money. And then the wealthy guy comes along and says, well, how can I make money off your money? And that's the situation. That owner is not going to spend a nickel of his money until he can be guaranteed he's going to be making more money off somebody else's money.
Yeah, you know, the irony, too, of the Raymond James Stadium where the football team plays, the Bucks play, is that all the revenue, even though it's publicly built, publicly financed, all the revenue, whether it's parking revenue, whether it's revenue for sales of items inside the stadium, the refreshments, the T-shirts, all that stuff that gets sold inside the stadium, all that revenue goes to the Bucks. The revenue for advertising on the stadium signs goes to the Bucks. And so this is our stadium that was paid for by the taxpayers of Hillsborough County, yet all the cream goes to the owner. So I think people were a little bit on the fence way back in the 90s when that stadium school tax was passed. Now I think there's people across the political spectrum that are their eyes are much more open, and they're going to say, yeah, we love baseball, we love football, but it's up to the owners to pay for the stadium. I think that's where a lot of people are these days.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
follow the money and you'll find what the source is.
All right, Steve, thanks a lot. Thanks for the phone call. All right, great to hear from you. Your dad was a smart guy. Let's go to Bob in Tampa. Hey, Bob, you're on WMNF.
Hey, thanks for the great stories. The woman that had that's been living in a tent for weeks with a disabled kid is just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I just wish that our president would stop the hundreds of tweets about the Mueller, what he thinks is a Mueller hoax, and actually just devoted his time to important topics like this. Like, why isn't he just saying, hey, what's going on since the hurricane? You know, devote a little time to the United States, and that would help.
Yeah, you know, in the passing, I think, of President Bush is very sad, and I think, you know, we need to, you know, think about what President Bush's history is and what his record is. I think Democracy Now! Did a pretty good job of kind of like evening the balance, because most of the remembrances of President Bush that I've seen over the last 48 hours have been very there was nothing he did wrong. Well, he did some things wrong, and I'm glad Amy mentioned it on Democracy Now! But what it's done is it's sucked the air out of all the other possible news stories out there, including the plight of the homeless people in Panama City and Mexico Beach. And I think that, you know, the media needs to get back on track. There's not just one story. There are several big stories out there that ought to be covered. And thanks to PBS and thanks to the Tampa Bay Times for at least covering it over the weekend. But I think more media, the national press, has to go there. The cold weather is setting in. These are Floridians. They're not used to cold weather. A lot of them don't have clothes because their homes were destroyed. There ought to be something that's done for these folks. And I think FEMA and the state agencies that help with disaster recovery, they're in the best position to help end this homelessness.
But this is a president who gave himself an A+.
That's right. But, you know, I think the media has got to put pressure on the president. And Fox News needs to send its morning crew out there to Panama City. And if they don't, Fox is in dereliction of its job to cover Americans. These are red counties. They ought to care about it.
I agree. Thank you.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Sean Canaan. He's coming up next. He's going to be talking about maybe one way to solve the problem of global warming, which is really the background to all these terrible hurricanes and fires that we've been experiencing. Sean Canaan is coming up next on the Midpoint program. Thanks to Frank Knox. He was our phone producer today and was intercepting all the phone calls before they got to me. He was able to tell me who was calling in. Keep your dial tuned to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg.